Welcome to the Nerd Party.
Welcome to Aggressive Negotiations, a Star Wars podcast that goes a little off the beaten path and explores the nooks and crannies of the Star Wars galaxy that sometimes you didn't expect questions to be found. I am one of your hosts, Jedi Master John Mills, and with me as always is my very good friend, Jedi Master Matthew Rushing. Matt, how you doing today?
I'm doing great. All I can think of is that the idea we'd like to take the road less traveled.
Absolutely. The hyperlane less traveled.
We're like Robert Frost.
Yeah. Do you think there was a Star Wars equivalent of Robert Frost?
Maybe one of the Wills.
Ooh, the Journal of the Wills. Yeah,
maybe they... I'm pretty sure that they're... I mean, it's written probably in Frostian language, so...
You know what? Especially... Yeah, okay, that would make sense. Like, and they have appendices and stuff. Maybe the Wills were like...
Whoa, appendices. What is this, Tolkien now?
No, that's what I'm saying, is the Wills are like the Tolkiens and the C.S. Lewises of the Star Wars galaxy.
Yeah, okay.
That works.
I love it. I love that
Book
idea.
Book it, print it. Put it in some expanded universe.
Well, and
thing.
It's funny. Okay, so totally random. This has nothing to do with anything we're going to talk about. But the other day we had a question of like, who would you want to have at a dinner party, dead or alive? It was our icebreaker at our work meeting. And what I said was the Apostle Peter... George Lucas and C.S. Lewis. Can you imagine having those guys and the storytelling ability for all three of them?
That would be pretty amazing. It really would be amazing. And it puts my list to shame. So we'll just keep on moving. We'll let everybody wonder what my list
would be. Just because, you know, for you it's like Magic Johnson and,
No, come on. Magic. Well, okay. He was a really good player, though. No.
Yeah, he was a great player.
But what we are going to talk about today on this episode is we were pondering recently because we've gone through and thank you everybody that listened to the Force Awakens commentary that we released with the rest of the Nerd Party crew.
Thank you so much.
We had a tremendous response to it and we appreciate that. We hope to keep doing special stuff like that every so often for you. But out of that, Matt and I were talking and we said, one of the things J.J. Abrams is the first new director on Star Wars in decades. And, there are comparisons to other directors and other styles that he brings to it and those sorts of things. And so we got to thinking, Lucas directed the original Star Wars in 77, but then he brought in Kirshner for Empire and Marquand for Jedi. Of course, everybody knows that. But then he directed all three of the prequels. And so sort of the question that we're coming at today is, what if Lucas had, let's say in this hypothetical situation, had directed Phantom Menace, and then he decided, you know what, I got my directing case in, I set up the world, and I want to bring in somebody else for the second one, Attack of the Clones, which is going to be an emotional turning point for Anakin, and it's going to move the story forward. And so the question becomes, who do we think Lucas would have gotten? Who, at the only conditions we're putting on ourselves are that the director would have had to have been alive at the time. We are not putting
I can't bring anybody back from the dead. I don't like doing that.
Exactly. Yeah. You can't go and you can't like clone Alfred Hitchcock and bring him back or something. And so that is the only condition we're putting on this, because in this hypothetical alternate timeline that we're creating right now, any director we name is going to have been available in some fashion. And so I'm going to toss the question to you first, Matt, but the variation I wanted at first is, who is the one director you think would be the dream get from your perspective? The one director, male or female, that would have been considered an impossibility. And if you had heard back then, Lucas is teaming up with X director to bring you Attack of the Clones, you would have just fallen over and just been unable to believe it. Who's your pick?
Oh, God, that is a really tough call. But I think, I really do. I think the only person that comes to mind for back then is Spielberg.
Okay.
Because of, you know, I know that George had wanted him to direct one of the Star Wars movies originally in the original trilogy, but of course, because of what had happened with the Directors Guild, so that meant that Spielberg, because he was a part of the Directors Guild, couldn't direct one of the Star Wars films at that point. But obviously, back in the prequel era, definitely could have done that. And I think that our minds probably all would have been blown if after episode one that it was announced Spielberg is taking the reins from Lucas directing wise. And the reason I say that too is just think about the closeness between them and the fact that they work so well together. Think about Indiana Jones.
Sure.
And I can't imagine somebody who at that point would have been able to pick up Lucas and do what he had in mind, but bring it to Vision Spielbergian. You know, I mean, you know what I'm saying?
Like, I do.
You put those two together and it seems to be kind of magic.
And the thing is, I'm trying to contain my brain from going down too many branches with your Spielberg suggestion, because he actually made my list. He's not my dream get. I'll get back to my dream get in a second. But I think with Spielberg, you hit on an interesting vein, because in this alternate timeline we're setting up, does that mean that Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull doesn't happen because Spielberg winds up working with Lucas on this? Not a worthwhile vein to go pursue, but just it's a thought that triggers. But
well, I hope not, because I like Crystal Skull, but that's neither here
nor there. So do I. We're the weird ones. We actually like it.
Hey, whatever. Everybody needs to bend to us. Do you remember Captain America Civil right. War? You plant yourself like a tree and you tell the world to move. So world move.
That's right. That is right. So
like the prequels while you're at it too.
Darn it. But okay. So Spielberg was on my list as well, but he's not my dream get. And the thing is, you know me pretty well. We've known each other for a few years now. I want to see if you can guess who my dream get would be for a director to have worked on Attack of the Clones. It should be pretty easy for anybody that knows me. This should be as easy as Mike Schindler.
I think you're thinking William Shatner. You want him to create another Star Trek 5.
That is crazy talk. Do not go down that road. I'm being serious.
I don't want to waste too much time. Just tell me, because I'm like really on the edge of
Christopher
my seat
Nolan.
Here.
I think Nolan. That's
interesting, because I know a lot of people who would like totally want to fight you right now. The thought of Nolan coming in. And
well, this is where I plant myself as a tree, because Nolan has an incredible visual style. He has a great sense of pacing. He knows how to brush up a script, and he knows how to get emotion that's on a similar. And I know how this will sound, but it's on a similar sort of level. It's communicated on a similar sort of level as emotion in Lucas's films. Nolan, in my view, has a real grasp of the epic scope, while at the same time planting the human emotion within that scope and making it relatable without it being sort of like a method actor sort of overblown performance. Like I would point to, even though it came out later, I would point to Matthew McConaughey in Interstellar, where the performance can be, from some regard, you could look at it and say, oh, well, that's sort of a toned down performance, but it's really an incredibly powerful one. And I think just Nolan would be so interesting to see what he would do with a Star Wars movie in the first place, but then Attack of the Clones, I think he could have really tackled some of those things that would have, I mean, I even dare say he might have brought something to it to keep in some of the stuff that got cut out from the final cut that Lucas considered unnecessary for the story.
Well, I was just thinking about the idea of the way he would have done the kind of noir mystery that you get, and I think he would have done that really well. I also think the war part would have been great, and I agree with you. I think, you know, for some reason people think that Interstellar is cold,
no,
and there's not a lot of emotion, but I don't understand that at all, because I completely feel everything those characters are feeling. Yep. And I think Nolan is the one who drew that out, especially, and I forget her name, apologize, but the little girl, I think it's Mackenzie Foy, who plays the daughter.
Yes.
And the way that he was able to pull out of her such a raw and honest portrayal mm-hmm. of that pain and that hurt is amazing. So I can totally see him being able to pull that out of Hayden Christensen and Natalie Portman. So I love it. I like the choice. I think it would work, and I have no problems with it, especially a younger Nolan. I think it would have been really interesting to see, you know, just what he might have done with all the toys available to him through, you know, Lucasfilm and the incredible palette that you have open at that
point. Now, the one thing I will say is that what we're both discounting with both of our picks here is we've both picked directors who might not have been as comfortable working with as much virtual territory as Lucas wound up using, if that makes sense. Both Nolan and Spielberg are very tactile directors. They, you know, they want their sets and they want their as realistic as possible sort of stuff. Although Spielberg does use a great deal of CG, Nolan uses it with great restraint. So it would be interesting to see if Lucas would have bent on that at all. But be that as it may, those are our two dream gets. Who is on your list that you would have considered a realistic great grab for Lucas to have gotten?
Now, I'll let everybody know how I made my picks. So I went through the list of the time period of the different films that came out in the, like, the year before the movie came out, the year the movie came out, and the year after. I looked through all of the directors that were directing major films at that point, and I chose ones that I thought, you know, would really fit that film. And for me, you know, I came to the conclusion, this might be a very random pick for some people, but Kathryn Bigelow.
Also on my list. Good choice.
Episode 2, because I loved her work in The Hurt Locker. Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking about the way that she would have handled this kind of political mystery going on. I think that would have been great. The war scenes, I think she would have handled fantastically.
Agree.
And I think that she would have been able to get on a level, especially with Portman and with Hayden Christensen, and mold that relationship between those mm-hmm. two and give it a more natural feel, be able to coach them, kind of pull out of them the performances that were needed to make that film work better.
Sure.
You know, that's, as we all know, George is not a actor's director. And unfortunately, the actors that he chose for that movie needed an actor's director, because that's when they do their best work.
See, I think it's an unfair complaint about Attack of the Clones, but we won't go. Maybe one of our commentaries in the future will be on Attack of the Clones. Who knows?
Oh, that would be fun.
But I don't ping the acting style so much. I understand and respect what you're saying with Bigelow. I think that her style does speak more, because you look at things like, I mean, I'll even bring it in there, Point Break. You know, it's very focused on the human interactions. And you look at Strange Days, which is, you know, a foray into science fiction that she did. That was very good. And also focused on, you know, the human element of things. My one parting, you know, sort of like absolution of the criticisms that the performances in Clones get right now is that there is literally, I can tell you right now, there is literally a 5-second chunk of one scene where if you cut it out, people wouldn't have hit on the acting as bad. But I'll wait for us to do our commentary to get to that. I can tell you exactly
Dang
where it is.
Dang it, now I am on the edge of
there
my seat.
There you go. Okay, but I think Bigelow's great. Bigelow, again, is on my list as well. So let's...
Wow, this is
isn't
awesome.
Isn't it great?
Okay, so for Attack of the Clones... I obviously took Bigelow from you, so I apologize.
That's okay.
But who do you think, like, you know, is the person that you would have chosen? And how did you actually come to your decision? Because we didn't actually talk about that beforehand when we were making our picks. So what did you use as a barometer for how you were going to pick your person?
Much like Nolan being my dream pick, I wanted to look for somebody who could bring a visual style that would have felt comfortable in the Star Wars galaxy, and somebody that would have to speak to, you know, something we just discussed, it brought a stronger emotional sensibility to some things. And in that, I don't mean the performances per se. I mean that somebody would have left in Anakin meeting the Nabaris, a director that would have fought for, even after the fight in the factory, the mock trial, a director that would have fought for those things to be left in, that wouldn't have been afraid of having the film run a little bit long. And that that goes into my decision to, I would have pulled Bryan Singer, because I think that Bryan Singer has a great overall sense of what is pleasing to an audience, how to connect to an audience. I look at movies that he's done, like Apt Pupil, where he's very good at bringing that interpersonal relationship to life. I look at the X-Men movies, where he has a sense of scale. And of course, I look to Superman Returns, which shows that he has a great respect for the era of filmmaking that's informing the prequels.
Yes.
And so I would have been very interested to see Bryan Singer. I think his you know, the way he frames shots, the way that the camera moves, would have felt very comfortable and would have worked really well. And I think he would have been a director to fight to keep the Nabari scenes in, to ground Padme and Anakin's relationship and make it flow a little bit better, story-wise. So that everything poured into Singer would have been like, Nolan's my dream get, and Spielberg's on the list, Bigelow's on the list. But I would have gone for Singer. Absolutely.
I think that that's a great call, because I'm thinking about, you know, Usual Suspects, mm-hmm. and the way that film dealt with kind of the underworld and everything that was going on there. And I'm thinking about Obi-Wan's storyline.
Sure.
With Singer as a director and the visual language he would have used there. Mm-hmm. And I really like that pick. And when you said Superman Returns, I was thinking, okay, yes, he has a love of the time period from which, you know, those old 40s Superman, mm-hmm. 50s Superman TV show. And then, of course, the wonderful genre of the serial. Like, mm-hmm. I really get that pick, and wow, that's really interesting. So let's just hope, cross our fingers, that Apocalypse is better than everybody's thinking it's going to
be. Yeah, well, so interesting picks out of the way, and dream picks out of the way, and we find out that we have some congruence on the list. This is a curveball, because we like to throw curveballs at each other on the show. Who is your offbeat choice? Who is your... Somebody might not have been active, very active at the time. They might have even been retired, and Lucas talks them into coming out of retirement. But the one criteria I'm putting on this is your dark horse, your oddball, your name that would have been something where the average person would have said, who? But you would have had somebody like us say, oh, I remember that guy or that woman. They directed X or Y. Wow, that's an interesting choice. Or, oh my gosh, like maybe this person directed, a cult classic that you enjoy. Who would you have? Because I actually have two choices on this, one that I prefer and one that sort of comes to mind. But do you have a dark horse pick?
Yeah, I think that this is a dark horse pick, especially with the time period that we're dealing with. A very niche director at the point, you know, one that's... was doing smaller films, films that were very character driven and very kind of introspective. Mm-hmm. I'm going with Sam Mendes.
Oh, brilliant!
Well, yeah, because when I'm thinking of, you know, when you've got Road to Perdition and American Beauty, then he went on to do like Revelation. Then he went on to do Revolutionary Road, and of course Skyfall, Inspector. You know, he can do the big, but he can also do the very small. And so I was thinking of Star Wars, and especially this movie, which really has a lot of interpersonal relationships happening. I wanted somebody who was a great director for the actors, again, to pull out those performances and to really make things pop in that way. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And maybe find a way to find the darkness or the slight humor or any of the things that you need, plus the visual language that he uses in his films, the way that he likes to have things shot, I think would have been fantastic for episode two, because again, it has noir feel. And I really think that he would have, I mean, think Road to Perdition.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, the thing is, while you're sitting here talking about Mendez and you bring up Skyfall, I think of that scene where Bond is fighting the assassin with the neon screen playing behind them. And I think of Coruscant. Yep. I think, oh my gosh, what would he have done with that? Like, how crazy would that have been?
Can you imagine a battle, a different type of battle, maybe between Obi-Wan and Zam Wessel or something, with that kind of visual language there? I mean, it just blows your mind.
And an important thing to highlight here is there can be plenty of people, you know, you can sit there and you can name directors and everything, but I think what gives weight to this conversation and makes it believable to talk about Mendez or Nolan bringing his, you know, or Bigelow bringing her visual sensibilities to everything is Lucas, with both Kirshner and Marquand, allowed them to bring in cinematographers and editors that they had worked with and they were comfortable with. He did not ride them hard and say, this is the crew you have to work with. He said, bring in the crew you like to make sure you're making the movie the way you want to make it, and I'm just going to edit everything for you.
Right.
Now, but before we get to my dark horse candidate, something else that I think is interesting is I know that Lucas, came back into the Directors Guild. You mentioned that earlier, his problems with the Directors Guild and everything. Do you think that his decision to direct all three was a purposeful dodge so that no animus could happen again? That he was basically like, you know what, there can be no problems at all if I direct all of these movies. Do you think that informed his decision at all?
I think, honestly, and I think George has even said this, I think his real thought was, what we're going to try and do technologically, I don't have time to explain to somebody.
Okay.
And if I am already going to be on set every day anyway, I might as well just direct the films myself, and then I don't have to worry about paying a director.
Sure.
Like that, you know, like,
and the thing is, that totally makes sense. And I think that also speaks to something we were talking about earlier, which is when we were talking about Spielberg and Nolan, like, they're both directors that have much more of a tactile. I think Mendez would be somebody as well that would want to shoot on location and supplement with CG, as opposed to what Lucas really wanted to push, you know, by using the arena scenes and stuff like that. So I think the cost of the film actually would have gone up as well, because the digital stuff, people don't, I think, realize this sometimes, but the digital stuff, the combining of miniature sets with, you know, live actors and green screens and digital manipulation actually went a great way toward saving a lot of production time and cost, which, of course, with Lucas being executive producer and putting up his own money, is going to be a concern.
Well, and I mean, just to think about that idea too, I mean, what George does with the prequels ushers in modern filmmaking, and it will never hold up in the same way that every person who pushed the boundaries, it doesn't hold up. And it's just a function of digital filmmaking in that way, that unless you went back and redid the visual effects shot for shot, they wouldn't hold up to today. And that, you know, I just had to give it in the same way that, you know, the stop motion in Jason the Argonauts looks awful now.
It's
still fun to watch, but we don't expect it to hold up to today's standards of stop motion. You know what I'm saying? I don't expect it to look like Phil Tippett's work.
Well, I mean, yeah, the go motion that opens Luke on the Tauntaun at the beginning of The Empire Strikes Back, like, back then was like, oh my gosh, there's a guy riding a Tauntaun. Whereas now you look at it and you're kind of like, it looks kind of Tim Burton-y. Which is not to take anything away from the work, because it's still brilliant work and it's still great and it's still photorealistic, but you can still tell. Your point, I think you and I very much are in agreement on that. But to bring it back around to my dark horse director, this is a real dark horse director. I don't think he was actually working at the time that that it came up. But remember, I removed that, and it's going to be a name nobody's going to recognize. George P. Cosmatos, who directed one of my favorite films of all time, Tombstone. A Western.
Oh, good.
Exactly.
Movie.
A Western, epic in scale, and rooted by a maverick friend and a law-abiding friend who are in the middle of corruption and gunfights, and is also pinned by a love story that is, you know, like a torture point for one of the main characters. And so I think also he could have been appealing to Lucas, because also on his resume, and you cannot discount this, also on his resume is Rambo First Blood Part 2, which cheesy 80s goodness, but an action movie. And you also have, unfortunately, Cobra with Sylvester Stallone, which, while not a good movie, proves that he can make something really cheap, and that would have been appealing to Lucas right there. Like, you know, he's the type of director where I think...
Was that a Golden Globus film?
I think it was. I think it was.
Yeah, because it sounds like that documentary that you had me watch.
Well, so. Cobra was... was a pretty amazing experiment of a film. It's very worth catching. It's only $3 on Amazon. But don't hold Cobra against him, is what I'm saying. Is for its time, First Blood Part 2 was an incredibly cathartic movie. Because America was still coming to terms with the whole Vietnam thing. And while First Blood dealt with the very, you know, grim aspects of it, of the effects of the war on the vets coming home and the way they weren't accepted and how difficult that made their lives, First Blood Part 2 was that big cathartic exercise that, you know, got everybody together to say, yeah, these things are wrong, and, you know, we need a hero to help us purge our terrible feelings about this. And I think that, you weigh all of those things in and you have Tombstone, he becomes an attractive choice to me. And I'm probably blinded by my love of Tombstone, but at the same time, it's a Western and he directs it like a Western. And if there's anything beyond the serials that influences Lucas's sensibilities, it's the American Western. So why not get a guy who made one of the best? So that's just my pitch for it.
No, you know what? You're saying this, and I'm thinking about Tombstone, and it's been a while since I've seen it, but I really remember enjoying that movie, and I think that he would bring something to the way the film is unfolding and the way that everything is unraveling at the seams for the Jedi mm-hmm. and all the characters. You know, this is the beginning of the end for them, and... You know, the way that Tombstone kind of builds up to that big moment mm-hmm. at OK Corral, this film builds up to that huge moment in the Colosseum on Geonosis. So I really think that would work.
And there's also a great moment where, you know, Kurt Russell snaps, you know, Wyatt Earp, played mm-hmm. by Kurt Russell, snaps and gets, you know, Ike on the train platform. You know, you tell him I'm coming and hell's coming with me. Like, I yep. think Cosmatos would have gotten that rage for Anakin, really, you know, yeah. which I think still communicates well. But, like, can you imagine if the director on the set was like, okay, you're not just bubbling over quiet, simmering rage. Come out of there mm-hmm. like, you know, an avenging angel. Like,
easy, kid. I'm sorry. Ain't easy. It ain't your kid. So you can take sorry and shove it up your.
Yeah. But yeah, so that's my dark horse candidate. Again, I'm not entirely sure that he was still working at that time. You know, dream dark horse then, I guess. So
there you go. I like
yeah,
it.
Yeah. So any other thoughts? Anybody else occur to you that might be worth pitching in our alternate timeline of things?
Okay. I do think that this person has to be mentioned, especially for the work that they were doing at this point, and that's Peter Jackson. Because if you think about what he did with Lord of the Rings, mm-hmm. and I think that Peter would have loved to have worked in something like this. And I think he would have gotten it. And I think of the grandeur of the fight in the arena, you know, think of Jackson having access to all these lightsabers and, mm-hmm. and Jedi the care in which he took of the Lord of the Rings films and how seriously he took bringing that to the screen. I think that kind of dedication for him with Star Wars, especially in this mm-hmm. film where you've got this big epic scope to it. I mean, you know, I always kind of wish that this had been filmed in 70 mil, you know, because it has some of the biggest, widest shots, mm-hmm. you know, coming mm-hmm. into the arena. I mean, they even used a Peter Jackson type bigature for the, I mean, most people don't realize this, that the arena itself is a bigature. It's not it's not a CGI creation, you know. So they were doing a lot of this type of filmmaking.
Just so I can cut you off, a bigature is a miniature of extraordinary size. And I had the good fortune to go to Celebration 2, and I remember Lauren Peterson talking about it and talking about the amount of work that they put into creating everything. And he was the first one to let it slip. And when he said, I remember him being on the panel and saying, and when we created Count Dooku's viewing box, and he like stopped suddenly, he's like, oh, was I not supposed, I wasn't supposed to say that. What he's like looked out at the room. He's like, they tell you all these things when you walk in, you're not supposed to say, and I put it in my brain. So forget I said that. And it was just, but most of us in the audience were like, yeah, don't worry. We knew we figured it out.
But yeah, I mean, I just, when I think of what he did with Lord of the Rings films and the battle sequences that he did, you know, I think he would have gotten that right. He also did so much with the characters and bringing them to life, bringing them out of the page, and bringing it out of the actors, too. And part of that was that he cast people who totally got into things. You know, I mean, Viggo Mortensen, sure. you know, living in sure. his Aragorn costume, that kind of, I mean, he got those kind of people. So, you know, if he had also been part of the casting process as well for episode mm-hmm. 2, with some of the characters, I think that would have been a good thing because he was so good at picking the characters for, the Lord of the Rings. You
Interesting.
Know, none of those people, don't hold up when you rewatch the films. So, anyone for you, John, that, you were thinking about that you just like, I should probably add him to this list or her.
You know, no, actually, my list is pretty, you already took Spielberg and Bigelow from me. So you pretty much, I think Jackson is a really intriguing choice. I agree with you that it would have been interesting to see him play within the Star Wars galaxy. And the Lord of the Rings movies have always been so interesting because you always have to ask the question with what they did with Gollum, for instance.
Mm-hmm.
Gollum and Yoda hit the screens at roughly the same time.
That's very
and
true.
And true comparisons would, and I've always wondered, would digital Yoda have been received differently? I'm not saying better, I'm not saying worse. Would he have been received differently if there was not that direct comparison to hold him up against with Gollum?
Or if they had found a way to use the motion capture with Frank Oz and kind of given him a way to be able to animate when Yoda was walking
mm-hmm.
and all of that so that it totally did feel like the movement and everything that you had with the puppet, yet digitized, I think that would have been a good way to go as well.
Interesting. Well, I think that this has been a heck of a conversation. I find it so interesting to talk about this and find out not just where we differ, but where we overlapped and sort of how our thinking. It's always enjoyable to have this sort of conversation with you strictly because I think we both operate on similar yet just different enough frequencies of the same wavelength. Really great discussion. I want to say before we close it out, once again, thank you to everybody who reached out to us after our commentary and after our soundtrack discussion. We did hear you. We got a number of messages on our Twitter account, which is at the Jedi Masters. And it's really been very flattering and very gratifying. So on behalf of both Matt and myself, thank you, everybody, for listening and for embracing the show.
Yeah, it means so much to us, and especially one of a huge thank you to everybody, too, who has been to iTunes and given us a review there. We so appreciate that. It's definitely helped us grow. And if you have a moment, go over there and give us an iTunes review, because as we grow as a podcast, I was looking at our numbers today, John, just how people listen, and I can say, without a shadow of a doubt, from looking at just the raw numbers, at least 80% of the people that listen to us listen through some sort of Apple medium, which means it's going through iTunes, which means that the rankings that where we rate have to do with the ratings that we get from listeners like you. So do us a favor and just take a couple of minutes, you know, just a few seconds, give us a star rating and a written review. That really helps us out. And no matter what it is, John and I will read it on the show.
Yes.
So it doesn't have to be 5-star. It doesn't have to be any of that. But we just want to thank you, because we appreciate you spending your hard-earned time to go and do that for us.
Absolutely.
Because we're here to do this show for you.
Absolutely. And we are here to do this for you. But also, we welcome people, you know, reaching out to us, not just on Twitter, not just through iTunes, but directly. Matt, how can people get in touch with you? Where else can they find you around the World Wide Web?
Well, John, you can find me all over the place. Gosh, I'm on Twitter at MattRushing02. I do that Instagram-y thing, you know, where you take pictures of, like, toys you have. I mean, action figures. I mean, collectibles. Yeah. Anyway, you can find me there. I also am on a network called Trek FM. And I do a few shows there. I do The Orb with Chris Jones, where we're talking about Deep Space Nine. I also do Literary Treks with Dan, where we're talking about the books and the comics of Star Trek. We also interview the authors, which is so much fun, so I hope you'll check that out. I do our General Geek Show, which means we don't talk about Star Trek, but we talk about all the other fandoms that we love. So from Bond to Star Wars to comic book films to cult classics to books, to just anything, that TV shows, just things we love. So come over and check that out. I think you'll love it. And John and I are actually a part of the Star Wars special feed we have for the 602 Club there. And I encourage you to check out some of our conversations there, because it really is the godfather of this show. Yeah. And it's, I mean, the conversations that we're getting in there are so deep and so great. I mean, we had to just start doing our own show because we needed to talk more wars. So check all of those places out. Now, John, of course, before we go, I have to let everybody know where they can find you, because people need to talk to you online more.
Like the ghost of Tom Joad, you can find me on Twitter at Kessel Junkie, roaming around, causing trouble and saving souls. You can find me on another podcast that I co-host with my pal Craig, called Words with Nerds, which is a bit more of a free form all around show. There is a new show that is coming up very shortly on the Trek FM network that I'm going to co-host with Michael Schindler, called Stage Nine, where we are going to explore the works of contemporary Star Trek creators. And it's going to be a lot of fun. We're in the planning stages as of the recording of this. And of course, Aggressive Negotiations is a proud part of the Nerd Party Network, which hosts Nerd Nuptial, The Senate Floor, and you can find The Nerd Party at thenerdparty.com, and also as part of the Blog Talk Radio Network.
And also means you can find us at Facebook at facebook.com/thenerdparty. You can also find The Nerd Party itself on Twitter under Join Nerd Party. And if you would like to send us an email, we love getting emails from the listeners. You can do that at an@thenerdparty.com. Well, John, I think there's only one thing left to say, and I think we should close negotiations.
Matthew, negotiations are closed.
Join the revolution. Join the Nerd Party.